Welcome to our Morning Throners podcast. I'm Nelson.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Kyle. And we're the fucking Morning Throners.
And welcome back to another episode of your favorite Song of Ice and Fire podcast. We are your Morning Throners. Got a good one on deck. John, one. Back up north above the wall. Gents, how you doing?
Never had a bad day in my life. I'm loving this chapter. Kyle, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot happened, but it was still a good chapter, right?
Get some great character introductions, though.
Yeah, we finally get to meet some people we've heard about.
Mance, Tormund, those are my two favorites.
Stir, you don't like Stir?
I mean, he doesn't say anything funny. He's not bad, but he doesn't say anything funny.
I knew you were going to love Tormund. He's a dwarf, pretty much, right? Like, you love dwarves.
Is he a dwarf?
No, but I mean, like, he reminded me, like, he's, like, built like a, you know...
Yeah,
high fantasy fat dwarf guy. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Fat guy eating whole chickens.
Yeah, just stuff in his face, covered in grease.
He's a little different. His description, Nels, from this, obviously from
appearance
the show.
Appearance-wise, yeah, big time.
I'm like, who's this fat guy? Is this Tormund? Like, I didn't think he was fat with a white beard. And
yeah, the main thing is in the show, he's got like a bright red beard. And in the... In the books, he's got a big white beard.
And he's not fat at all. He's fucking, like, stout. He's like a
He looks
linebacker.
Like he'd fuck you up, yeah. Yeah.
In the books, you're saying?
In the show.
In the show.
In the show, he's not, like, fat.
Actor.
He's like,
I don't know. I mean, is he fat in the, in the books?
I didn't think he was super fat. He's big.
I'm pretty sure, like, when I noted him,
he was,
said
like, robust.
Fat,
so, I mean,
fat
like,
man
he's,
with,
like,
with
wide.
A white beard.
Yeah. I mean, robust I means think... you could go a month with no food and survive off belly fat, right?
I mean, I don't know. I kind of took it as maybe, like, just, like, beefy, you know? Like, maybe he's...
It's the same thing.
Yeah, whatever. I meant like jacked, but not ripped, right?
A short but immensely broad. So broad. Maybe he's not fat. He's just super wide, wide shoulders.
Yeah, like I said, it not important. Just I thought at first I was like, did I read he was fat? And then I went back and I was like, no, there's not actually any defining.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good chapter. It's cool. Like John is so like, bleh, you know?
Boring. Yeah, that's why John's not one of my favorite characters.
Everybody around him in this chapter is like has some personality, has some color to him, so that's fun.
It doesn't pick up exactly like timeline wise where we left off. John says at one point that they've been marching for at least 6 days. I'm guessing it's probably just about 6 days. Can't be too much more than that.
I mean, he knows when the sun goes up
yeah
and down.
Yeah, he's not in distress or anything.
Yeah, but in like it does pretty much pick up right where the last. Again, not the day, like the second, but like nothing's changed from where the last John chapter ends. Last John chapter ends, he kills Corrin, he goes over to the other guys, and this chapter kind of picks up with like, again, we get a little bit of that recap stuff, right? At the end of the last one.
Yeah, we go a day back, like halfway through, so.
Yeah, and well, just like a lot of stuff John was saying at the end of that last one, he says here, right? Like people were arguing with Rattleshirt. He's like, oh, they are a free folk. The exact same thing happens at the beginning, you know what I mean? Just kind of like reminding you. How all that works.
The power structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we start this chapter with the group of them walking to the wildling, I guess, I don't know, campsite now, huge camp village.
Yeah. One thing I'll say is when John does get captured at the end of the last John chapter, he says to like Ygritte, like, oh, are we going to go back up into the Frostfangs now? And she's like, oh, no, we're behind. We're the rear guard or something like that.
Yeah, we're done up there.
Yeah, like we got to catch up to them now. So they're moving past.
Uh-huh.
Which again, kind of matches with what...
Chet's chapter.
We heard in exactly Chet's chapter.
Yeah, exactly. That was what I was going to say. This is pretty much the camp. And John even's like, oh man, these people are so fucked if this guy's come down and smash him in the middle.
Yep.
So...
So we we'll learn see. About some of these guys that John's with now, right? So not like the wildling higher-ups... but like just like basically Rattleshirt's
band. Some other random cats.
I feel like Rattleshirt's probably a higher up, right?
Yeah, John says like he was one of the ones whose like name is getting passed around, like that the Night's Watch knew about before he even went ranging.
Lord of Bones.
But the guys who are with him are Lennel, who, and again, they go over these guys' names when they start like giving out, because they all took Corrin's stuff, right? So Ygritte got his cloak and she ends up getting his helm because it's too big for Longspear Rick. But Lennel gets his hauberk. Ragwell, who's a spear wife, gets his gloves. One of the bowmen gets his boots. Then we got Longspear Rick, who again is kind of like hanging out with him for the rest of the chapter. Tried on the helmet, but it fit too poorly.
So Eager got that as well.
Yep. And then Rattleshirt didn't get any armor, but he got the bones. He's got a bag of bones and he's got Eben's head.
He's got to boil that shit.
Yep.
I mean, he's already got some pretty sweet armor, and the bones are going to be more armor, most likely anyway, right? So he kind of did get armor.
I think it's just so he can tell people, oh, these are Corin's bones instead of just some random dude's bones. Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple just notes on John. Ghost is still with him, following kind of behind the pack. And then as it gets darker, he gets closer.
Yeah.
And then John just notes that, like, he still sticks out with this group. Like, he's in... like pure all black.
Yeah.
Looks like the enemy.
Wolf. Yeah. I do think the way this chapter starts is weird, just because we've noted it before along the lines of like the Chet chapter. The world was gray darkness, smelling of pine and moss and cold. Like, again, like cold is one of those things that like you can't smell cold, but like it makes me think of like others, right? Because like
I disagree. I don't know if I did last time or not.
Yeah. It's just like when it's that cold, like you feel cold, it tastes cold, like you smell rain's coming. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things.
Nelson, which I think you're trying to talk about the others or whatever, right? Like, I mean,
yeah. I relate smelling cold to like being other, like others type stuff. If you smell the cold.
Well, what I was going to say is that there is a point here or a spot here where John and Ygritte, even, I think, are like super cold, like even around the fire, hands tucked in up in his jacket, like he's like, I shouldn't be this cold, but I'm freezing.
Yeah. And that was another parallel to the Chet chapter. And the other parallel to the Chet chapter that I found, that again, I don't know what the hell it means, but doesn't Chet like walk over a stream that's like half frozen?
Yeah.
Like he's around a beer, so. Bear, he walks in across a frozen stream, and then he gets back to camp. And John does the exact same thing here. He's like out with these wildlings, crosses this half frozen stream, and then gets to the wildling camp. But yeah, I don't know what the hell it means, but...
Yeah, well, who cares? It's cold as shit up there. Everything is frozen, so if there happens to be a stream, they're walking over it, and it's probably half frozen.
The thing is, there's not many paragraphs, or like, two paragraphs that I'll read together and not know, like, where that's going to mean something later or not. And both times, in the Chet chapter and in this chapter, I'm like, why would George mention this? Like, the stream doesn't come...
Because he's making a setting. He's not doing anything but describing where they are.
Or paralleling. For some reason, well, that we don't know.
Yeah, if you want to be a psycho like yourself and
that's what we do.
Write a Reddit post on what does the half frozen stream mean? Go ahead.
I mean, that is the podcast, Nelson's defense. That is
I'm not dying on this hill.
Yeah, it is the podcast. Not this goddamn stream. Let's go into like what does it mean that Corin Halfhand's bones are in a bag and what's his
and
name?
So was doesn't, the dragon have glass.
Doesn't have his finger bones in his bag anymore. Like make that parallel. That's a parallel.
Sometimes
that I can
I'll
at least be like,
parallel.
Okay, there's bones in a bag. Davos just lost his bones in a bag. How about that parallel?
I do have a parallel later to the Davos chapter. We'll get there later.
All right, back on track. So they're walking in a single file line. Ygritte and Longspear are in charge of guarding him. I believe Ygritte is at the rear, but I'm not sure. I'm making that up. One of them's got to be at the rear.
Yeah, she is behind him. He's in front. Yep.
Just this is you already mentioned this, but they're just like talking freely back to Rattleshirt. It's not like he's in charge. It's kind of weird, you know. They've kind of falling into ranks, being with Mance, I guess, but they're not really. But they listen to a point, but they still have their opinion.
Well, it's like imagine us when we were all in college living together, right? Eight people in the room. If everyone knew I was in charge, like at the end of the day, if push comes to shove,
I never lived
I'm
with you,
charge.
So that's not true. You never lived with me. You never, ever were in charge of a group that I lived with.
The thing is, I didn't even live in your room and I was still in charge of the group. And everyone knew
you
it.
You were literally, this is the truth.
People would talk back,
you were
but they knew
the
I was in charge.
Bottom rung of that room. If we had to take a picture, you were taking the picture. You weren't even in the picture. So.
I'm making a joke, but you know what I mean. Like even in like friend dynamics, there's like... Maybe not like...
There's only one cat. There's only one seat room.
No one's going to understand what that means, but you know what I mean. Like, in like, there's dynamics where like, yeah, you'll talk back to somebody, but if they're like, yo, shut the fuck up or I'll beat you up, you know what I mean?
That's
you're going to be like, yeah, okay.
It doesn't even sound like Rattleshirt's the best warrior here.
Yeah, it is strange, huh?
Not out of everyone in the tent later on, but I think he's the best warrior here. I think that's how that must work.
I mean, okay. I mean, we don't know enough of these people.
We don't, but like, I take it kind of like a Dothraki thing.
He's also kind of unique as well, right? Like, I mean, he's like the dude wearing all these bones and like he's got a giant skull helmet. And like, I mean, I feel like he kind of just inspires.
That's true. It's not always about like actual ability. It's sometimes intimidation can get into it, right?
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. One thing that is
definitely apparent. His Rattleshirt has no belief that John is actually flipping sides.
Which John isn't flipping sides, right?
He's not. Rattleshirt's right.
Rattleshirt's right.
John's made that pretty clear, at least in his mind at this point, like, oh, yeah. I'm doing a job. They're not going to catch me. And Rattleshirt's sniffing that shit out.
Yeah.
I don't know if he is, though. I think he would have been skeptical of anybody. So I think this is true. Just his neutral setting is to just fuck those crows, right?
Yeah, definitely with a crow.
Sure, but if we get into a little speculation time here, at one point, Mance was a crow. And now Rattleshirt is listening to everything Mance says.
I understand.
So, I agree with you.
All I'm saying is his default setting is that. I'm not saying he can't be won over.
Let's say this about Mance, too. Like, Mance didn't come off the wall and be like, all right, I'm your king beyond the wall.
We don't know exactly how that happened.
Well, I'm assuming that he's been over for, what, 20, maybe not 10, 15 years he's been off the wall?
Sure.
So
it was also different than this.
What I'm saying is, like, he had to join a wildling crew at some point.
Well, it has to be less than 10 years because he saw John playing at Winterfell when John's old enough to play. So John's 15 now, so he had to be. He was on the wall at least.
He
10
could
years
be ago. 5 years old playing snow on the wall.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So then,
Whatever.
It is impressive that Mance has only done it, has become king in 10 years.
At some point, he joined up with a group of wildlings. I'm sure he wasn't on his own surviving, and had to prove that he was a wildling, and they accepted him. And from there, he just continued to gain clout. Like, he had to start somewhere. I'm not sure. He didn't start with King of the North clout.
Yeah.
Well, my point was that it was kind of different too, right? So, like, he gets into the story later. He left because essentially the Brotherhood was, or the Black was taking his personality and his personal freedoms, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really what he's trying to say.
Enjoy a kiss and enjoy some color in his life.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I love this new coat. It was cloak. It was a gift from the lady that saved me, and then here they are, they're going to destroy it and just put me back into the ranks, essentially.
So,
the point of that was that he left, you know, he just like walked out and left and deserted from the wall, whereas John was captured on this crew with Corin Halfhand in this really strange time of things happening, right? Like the wildlings are all gathering and digging for this weird shit, and the Night's Watch is out probing and doing a ranging up in this weird spot. And so, I mean, like, that's all I'm saying. It's like, it's a little different. So
I think it's interesting too, is that Mance asks, like, are you actually turning? Cause you're scared that we're going to kill you. Like, do you actually want, like, what are you doing here? But that's like,
I think Kyle's point, that's the most likely, right? That is, if anybody else turned up, that's probably why.
Yeah. Right. So, and that probably has, they don't care about that. You know what I mean? They're going to be like, well, fuck you. You're going to die anyway. Like, you don't want to be here because of the wildling cause.
We've seen that down south, right? With like Renly's guys just turning right back and shit like that. Like, that's not a very strong bond to a group of people is home.
I was wondering though, if he would have said that, do you think they would have turned away? Like, why not join us? Sure. One more.
I think they would have killed him. Yeah. I think they would have, like, oh, you're just here because you're afraid we're going to kill you. Like, you have no, that's no allegiance. There's no purpose for you to be here.
I don't think he would be able to ascend as high as he's trying to here, staying as close to Mance.
I agree. But I think he might. I think that's about a 50-50 chance.
I think they'd cut
him. I think he has a 50-50 chance if you said that.
No.
Why not? Why not just be free? Because he's basically saying the same thing Mance did there. It's like, I decided.
No, he's not.
I guess you're right.
No, he's not. No, he's not at all.
Yeah.
He's flipping. If he's flipping because he wants to leave the Black and the Brotherhood because of
problems he has,
constraints
with it.
On you, that's a big difference to, oh, you're gonna kill me, wait, I'll fight for you. There's no allegiance there's no purpose.
And that's I guess what I'm saying is helping boost him up this ladder potentially, or at least giving him access to getting closer to Mance.
I think one thing too I just want to mention, because Rattleshirt's also convinced that Mance is not gonna buy into John as well.
Yeah, because he basically is like, oh, we'll go to see Mance, and then we'll skin him later and shit like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a weasel in you.
Yeah.
So the next night, or the next part, is they flash back to a night before when it is super cold and they're in a bowl on top of a nameless mountain. And Ygritte and Johnny Boy are kind of cuddled up by a fire.
Yeah, she's like, he'll take you. She's like, take me for what? And she's like, what do you mean? Take you as one of us. Like, that's what you're doing. And he's like, And she says that all crows want to run free.
Yeah, he's not the first to fly down from the wall.
Yeah, so this has happened before, I guess, besides Mance. I'm guessing.
I'm sure. Why not, right?
I mean, you have two options, desert south and get your head cut off, yeah, or desert north and have a chance of surviving.
That's true. I mean, that was Chet's plan. Chet was like, fuck, we'll go hold up at Crassers.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't foresee it being that crazy of a thing, especially when there was a lot of people on the wall. Like, they probably were like, all right, fuck it, we lost one, like, we'll hunt him down one day.
Yeah.
And get his ass. But so he asked, like, all right, like, if will I be free?
Can I leave?
Free.
Yeah, see you later.
And she's like, yeah, but then we're free to kill you too.
Yeah, we're free to do whatever back.
And then it's one of the main times he thinks of the job that he got from Corin. So
yeah, Corin told me I got to do my duty.
So do you want to read out what the duty is?
I will see and hear and learn. And when I have, I will carry the word back to the wall.
Yep. Yeah.
And then he goes into a little bit more detail later on. Let's just get out of the way now. He's looking for whatever power Mance was digging for or whatever they were doing.
Did they find it? What was it? Yeah.
Yeah, because the whole thing they're talking about, I was like, okay, sure, Mance gathered all the wildlings, but why would he gather them in the most inhospitable place? Like, that still doesn't make sense. And what Corin had learned from torturing that guy, it was before Corin got there, so we didn't see it, but he basically says, like, oh yeah, they're there looking for something. All he says here is some power, right? So that's what we got. They're looking for some power in a bad place, and we don't know if they got it or not. John's mission.
But I feel like Greed or whatever, one of them kind of implied they did find what they were looking for. Like, we're done up there now. We're going south.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's all, that's a prediction or whatever, but so leave it. But that was my understanding of why they were all leaving. Like, yeah, that's over with.
Yeah.
On to the next.
Gotcha. So the next thing is they basically get there. Well, they get met by, they cross the stream, and then they get met by these outriders. Eight men and women clad in fur and borrowed leather. Some in there was like a helm and mail, but mostly not. Mostly just fur and borrowed leather. None of them had any weapons. They all just had like spears and fire hardened sticks, basically, except for one new guy who we get a name from.
Which kind of goes into back to the first chapter, right? Like the intel and the suppositions of the army they're about to face, the Chet chapter, is pretty accurate, right? Like, these places are vulnerable. The guys aren't well equipped. Like,
yeah.
Find steel every now and then.
Very similar to Tyrion's friends before they became Tyrion's friends, the mountain people.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it makes sense, right? Yeah. They don't have access to all the same supplies, so they make do with what they have.
Exactly. I've been like,
I don't know.
Why not learn smith?
Because you live in the middle of nowhere and there's nobody to teach you.
Well, you got people from the Night's Watch. Maybe some of them know some skills. You'd think eventually, but
we'll send Gendry over the wall for him.
We got to talk. Donald Noy. We got that. Donald Noy's our one-armed smith from the wall. What if he deserted? Then everybody be knowing it. Everybody north of the wall be smithing dope-ass warhammers.
They probably also don't have the materials to mine and get everything.
We don't got to go down to Sanjin. That was, didn't really matter. So the guy who shows up, who we learn about, is they call him the Weeper, and their leader was a fleshy blonde man with watery eyes who had a great curved scythe. And John assumes this guy's the Weeper. And I'm guessing it's because he has his eyes.
Well, and he probably seems as important as Rattleshirt or Lord of Bones, you know?
Gotcha.
As well. Like, he probably gives off the same vibe, so it's got to be a named dude.
Yeah. And John even says he's one of the known guys, like Rattleshirt, Harm of the Dog's Head, Alfin Crowkiller.
I don't remember the Weeper being, I mean, I'm sure he was. I don't remember that name.
I don't think we heard it.
I don't know if we heard it before either. I think I added it to my notes first time here. Yep.
Okay.
But I think we just haven't heard all of the stories, right?
We have heard Harma Dog says she was the one leaving the van in the Chet chapter. And I think we have heard Alfin Crowkiller just like in passing.
I've heard the name Crowkiller for sure.
Crowkiller, yeah.
Yeah. Last time he just like rattled off a list like this. I think he just name dropped it.
Yeah. And that's all I'm saying is maybe we just didn't get the full list and the Weeper isn't.
Yep.
Weeper's a pretty dope nickname.
Not really.
Yeah, not if it's because you have like watery eyes.
Yeah, your face is
But leaking. It's kind of like, I don't know, mystic, like the Weeper.
Unless like you're the Weeper because
you're making, well, he has, you're making scythe. Widows cry.
Yeah, exactly. You're making like wives and stuff cry because you're always killing their husbands. That makes sense because he has the scythe, so he kind of should look like the Grim Reaper, right? Weeper, Reaper.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if George is doing that on purpose. He's got a scythe.
Doubtful.
Grim Weeper.
Yeah.
The Grim Weeper.
He shows up, he sees ghosts, he's like, what the fuck, what we got going on? And he's like, oh yeah, it's a crow come over.
He's a war. And it's funny because, like, every person has their role in the story about John. Egret wants to be like, John, he's flipping. He's coming with us. Rattleshirt's like, oh, yeah, he killed Corn Halfhand. We're about to kill him, too, because he's a fucking crow.
He's a coward. He was afraid I was going to take his bones.
Someone says he's a warg. Like, everyone has their role, and it's the same, like, lineup when we get to Mance, too, or to
Yeah, Jordan. Well, and another thing Rattleshirt always mentions is, and he killed Oral, too.
Yeah.
Like, he has killed one of our dudes. Yeah. He didn't only kill Halfhand.
Yep.
That's true. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about it like that, but that's definitely what he's doing. He's, like, showing the bad things that John's done.
So Weeper's like, all right, take him to Mance, and they continue through. As they walk through, the dogs definitely get a whiff of Ghost. Don't enjoy his company.
Yeah.
And we get a kind of a cool quote. They're like, oh, wow, these dogs don't like your woof. And he's woof, 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 woof.
Yeah, John says it's because they're dogs and he's a wolf and they're not as kind. And John thinks, no more than I'm yours.
Yeah.
So John feels like, he kind of feels like Ghost right now. He's the wolf among the dogs, like the wolf among the sheep. And then this is also where he starts talking about how defenseless they all are.
Mm-hmm.
We did skip the part where where Ghost got attacked at night or whatever and just fucked up with that dude's dog.
That's true. Yeah. One of the earlier nights when they were camping, one of Rattleshirt's dogs snuck up from behind and learned a lesson.
Yeah. So that, like, that, it just shows, I mean, if you want to do the parallel there that you're trying to make of John and Ghost, maybe something's going to happen. He's going to have to fuck somebody up.
There you go. Someone's going to try John.
There's two predictions.
Rattleshirt. I don't know if that'd be good or smart of him to fight any of these people currently, though.
Yeah. So as he's walking through, there's a dude making a bunch of spears. There are some kids sparring with wood. They're just like
sticks.
Sticks.
Yeah. Some of these cats don't even got tents. They're just like leaned up behind rocks under their wagons and stuff. Yeah.
And then there was a lady making arrows. And then, dude, like, there's also people just kind of living. You know, there's people dancing and kids running around playing. And
yeah, this is like the not warrior people that, like, that's kind of like they were talking about the Chet chapter, like, we're gonna destroy these people because more than half of them don't even know how to fight. They're women and children. Not that, like, the women in the wildling culture know how to fight, but, like,
some women and children.
Yeah. They also got just, like, random animals walking around too. Sheep, goats.
It's gonna be sad if, like, they fuck all these women and children up, right?
Yeah, but
like,
we don't really know how the, I mean, I guess in the moment of battle they're gonna fight anyone that fights them. Like, what are the women and children gonna do, like, run for the hills? Or, like,
well, wasn't that the point though, is that they'd go in and destroy the, like, him, expose weakness and, like, make him regret coming this way?
Exactly. from the plan of how they're attacking.
I thought the point was to like, you know,
yeah, just tie in it,
like, sure, keep going south, but you're gonna keep getting your innocence picked apart here.
Yeah. So they come up to some trees, and Rattleshirt's like, all right, set up camp here. Egret, Longspear, bring John. All right, we'll fucking skin him later, and I'm going to stuff him with a weasel when we get out.
Yeah, that's a weird line. For some reason, it makes me think of Arya, just because she went by Weasel, right? That was one of her names. Yeah, I don't know if that has anything to do with that. It just makes me think of Arya.
Sure. So John sees, as they're walking through, like, there's more free folk. He's seeing more free folk probably than any crow ever. And then, again, they're like, there's no defense, there's no discipline, and we get an old school Ned quote there.
Discipline's worth more. Discipline beats numbers 9 times out of every 10.
Yep.
Yep.
Thank you, Ned. And then here's the king's tent, big-ass white one, polar bear skin, or fur.
Yep. Great elk antlers on top. Dope looking.
Music playing inside.
Great song, too. One of my top Game of Thrones songs. Dornishman's wife.
The Dornishman's wife.
Yeah. Goes in. We got peat burning in all four corners. So peat is like dirt.
Moss.
Dry moss.
Peat moss.
I thought this is something they do in Scotland.
How do you burn fucking dirt?
My understanding is they take like a big long cookie cutter, like an earth core thing, right? Maybe like a foot long. That's like a circle. And they just punch it into the ground and basically pull out a bunch of, like, I guess you're right, it's like mossy dirt, like decomposing moss. And they burn that because there's no trees in Scotland, right?
Fuck if I know, man. You're out of my depth here.
If we have anybody from Scotland out there, let us know how you burn peat.
All this knowledge is based on Scotch whiskey being
Pete fired?
Pete fired, yeah. It's Pete's involved instead of like Oakwood or something. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure Pete's moss, but
okay. Either way, moss or dirt, it's the same. It's basically the same thing.
I got you.
Moss turns into dirt if you rip it out and just drop it, right? It'll turn into dirt.
So do you.
Sure. But moss is closer.
All right, whatever. It's burning red. There's a weird smoke. He can't really see, but he knows that there's other people sitting around. He counts six. The Doorsman's wife is being sung. Pretty cool song for sure.
Yeah. So I'm going to go over some of these people here because we get some descriptions. A dark young man and a pretty blonde woman were sharing a horn of mead. So this is Val and Jarl. Yeah, we don't get any of these names yet.
Jarl's the pet.
Yeah, the pet. We learn about him later, though. Pregnant woman over a brazier cooking a brace of hens.
Dala.
Brace, Game of Thrones word. What's a brace of hens? This is also in Lord of the Rings, a brace of conies.
Is it three?
I think it's two. A pair of something is a brace.
But he takes one and there's still two left.
I was confused by that as well. So I'm thinking he had two on the table.
Maybe there's multiple fires.
Or there's multiple fires.
With different braces.
Because I was confused by that too. But when I looked up brace of something, it said a pair. That's what I saw.
I'm going to sound like an idiot because I'm pretty sure brace is two goals in soccer. Yeah.
I wanted to look that up because I'm pretty sure like Sam says a brace of conies at one point in Lord of the Rings. It's like a famous line. That's no way. Like, oh, I have a nice brace of conies right now. And a conies means rabbit, I think.
I easily read over the word brace.
Brace is two. Yeah.
Then we got a white-haired... While a gray-haired man in a tattered cloak of black and red sat cross-legged on a pillow, playing a lute and singing.
It's his manse.
So the song, should I sing it?
Yeah.
A Dornishman's wife, as fair as the sun, her kisses were warmer than spring. But the Dornishman's blade was made of black steel, and his kiss was a terrible thing. The Dornishman's wife would sing as she bathed, in a voice that was sweet as a peach. But the Dornishman's blade had a song of its own, and its bite sharp and cold as a leech. As they lay on the ground with the darkness around, and the taste of his blood on his tongue, his brothers knelt by him and prayed him a prayer, and he smiled, and he laughed, and he sung. Brothers, oh brothers, my days here are done. The Dornishman's taken my life. But what does it matter, for all men must die, and I've tasted the Dornishman's wife.
Why did you sing that in falsetto?
I don't know. As soon as Why I started, you get I into wanted your, to go low voice.
Into your gut a little bit and been like, and I've tasted the Dornishman's wife.
I should have, but once I started, it was too late. It was too late. I had to commit.
I'll give you
decisions were made.
I'll give you a C- on your approach.
The thing is, with the Bear and the Maiden Fair, that's a low-pitched song. The Dornishman's Wife is a high-pitched
Whatever
song.
Whatever you say. So, one thing I have as they sit down is Rattleshirt takes off his helmet and looks like a dweeb.
Yeah, skinny. Like, John thinks he's, like,
just
small.
Like a normal guy.
He definitely gains a lot of power from his mask there, right? Like, the Hound is still fucking, like, fearsome when he takes off his wolf or dog head. This dude, he takes off this giant skull and, like, he's just like a nobody.
Wow, you look like a dweeb.
Yeah, read that quote. Beneath the bone and leather.
Beneath his bone and leather armor, he was a small man, and the face under the giant skull was ordinary, with a knobby chin, thin mustache, and sallow pinched cheeks. His eyes were close set, one eyebrow creeping all the way across his forehead. Dark hair thinning back from a sharp widow's peak.
Yeah.
Unibrow loser.
Yo.
Hey.
Chill out, Matt. I got a mean unibrow if I let it go.
Stop coming at us, man.
You have a unibrow too, Kyle?
You probably have one. Get out of here.
Yeah, I have technology to trim it.
Thing is, back in college, Jeff's wife's roommate used to do my eyebrows. She did once or twice. Jeff's wife's new roommate doesn't know how to do eyebrows. So I'm fucked.
I could pull them shits off her face. So John looking around, he's observing the people. He's like, all right, which one of you is Mance? And beside the brazier, a short but immensely broad man sat on a stool, eating hen off a skewer, hot grease running down his chin and into his snow-white beard. But he smiled happily all the same. Thick gold bands graven with runes bound his massive arms, and he wore a heavy shirt of black ringmail that could only have come from a dead ranger. A few feet away, a taller, leaner man in a leather shirt sewn with bronze scales stood frowning over a map, a two-handed greatsword slung across his back in a leather sheath. He was straight as a spear, all long, wiry muscle, clean-shaven, bald, with a strong, straight nose and deep-set gray eyes. He might even have been Conley if he'd had ears, but he had lost both along the way. Whether the frostbite or some enemy's knife, John could not tell. Their lack made the man's head seem narrow and pointed. Both the white bearded man and the bald one were warriors. That was plain to John at a glance. These two are more dangerous than Rattleshirt by far. He wondered which was Manserator.
Yeah.
Challa has his ears, man.
What?
Challa. Right?
Yeah, Challa. Challa, son of Czech. Tyrion's ear lady, yeah.
On the necklace.
You said son of Czech.
Daughter of Czech. Daughter of. Daughter of Czech?
I don't know, man.
I think that's right. Yeah, so these, we find out later, Tormund and Stir. I think is what how people say it.
Stir.
So I wonder what, like, I mean, he read them and they seem pretty badass. And he read Rattleshirt, doesn't seem badass, but like. And also, he describes these two as warriors. And does he ever describe, like, Mance like that?
No.
Not really.
Definitely not.
I mean, we just got the description. He was a gray-haired man in a tattered cloak.
Yeah.
Sitting cross-legged on a pillow. No warrior sits cross-legged.
Playing some guitar.
So after the song, the earless man asks what John, what the hell is he doing here? And again, we get the story. Rattleshirt's like, he killed Oro. He's a warg. Earless like, he's one of us. And then they ask John his name, and he tells him Jon Snow, and also calls him Your Grace.
Yeah. And he's thinking to himself, like, should I bend a knee?
Yar, yar, yar.
Yeah, so again, it makes sense that he thinks it's Steer, because Steer's the one, like, questioning him.
Yeah,
he's the first one. Well, he's got the stick up his ass, right? He's standing real straight and tall, and you can tell he's been around.
Yeah.
And...
But yeah, Tormund laughs. He's like, are you blind? Like,
how could a king with no ears? He put a crown on and his feet of all three through his neck.
Coming next. Yeah. And he just crushes his chicken, greased beard, greasy fingers. Yeah. And he tells him to turn around. He might find what he's looking for. John turns around. The singer stands up. Mance introduces himself. And he tells John that he knows who he is. He's like, oh, you're John. You're Ned Stark's bastard, the Snow of Winterfell. And John's surprised by this. And like, when word get north, like, say Mance never went to Winterfell. Like, would he knew that Robert was coming to Winterfell. Wouldn't he know that there's a bastard? I guess maybe he would, but how would he know that that's John?
Yeah, I think I was lost here how he knew too.
I think to the point of it too, and I was, to be honest, lost as well. Or like, did he like drink with Benjen one time, and Benjen talked about just Ned having a bastard and that being the only, I mean, I'm sure there's more Snows up here, but
when
I thought, to be honest, when he said, I saw your face twice before, he was speaking of seeing Benjen and Ned and seeing John's face within them, not actually physically seeing him twice.
Agreed.
You forgot that Mance had actually seen John twice, Jeff, when you were reading this?
No, I knew that he went down there, but I didn't know that he saw, like, Nows knew that John was there
that
too.
Close
yeah,
to John.
Like,
yeah.
Gotcha. Oh, John was the little kid about to push snow on us. Yeah. Or
well, I talked to him. Yeah, physically.
But yeah, this is Kyle. This is the kind of thing that, like, we would talk about in the spoiler section in the first John, because the first John chapter is the feast. Like, yeah, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but
okay, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, that's the feast, and there's no mention of Mance. There's no mention of anybody there, but there's a mention
of the
singer, of like the harpist or whatever who's playing. Who Mance says he was like, yeah, I sat in the back and I saw you and I listened to the harpist. There's a mention of, like, yeah, somebody was playing the high harp, and then Mance says the same thing, right? So, it, like, he has corroborated, and he knows about the wheelhouse and stuff, so it makes sense that he knows, but, like, it wasn't too much planted in that chapter, but it's interesting to go back, like, when you reread and be like, oh, Mance, everything that happened here, Mance also saw, type thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was not expecting that.
Yeah, pretty cool deal.
I also, I guess my problem was I didn't realize how short Mance had been north of the wall as well. Like, I mean, they might have mentioned it, but this really kind of hammered it home.
Yeah.
Back to we talked about that already, but so that kind of changed my perspective. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't think he was wearing the black close enough that he would have seen John alive.
Yeah. Gotcha.
What is interesting to me is that he climbed the wall, went over, joined, you know, as a freelancer or whatever they call it, but he's wearing black with some red stripes in it.
He's not really. Yeah, I guess red stripes.
By that time, he's a wildling. He could have changed into what, like, he could have worn whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but then aren't they like, oh, this guy's a wildling? I don't.
Well, what's a wildling uniform? Just furs?
Like fucking furs, yeah. Like he's joining a southern company in summer.
Furs and leathers, the same thing that peasants wear.
He's joining a southern company, and so they're probably wearing like at least cheap leather down south, or like a cheap cloth. They're not wearing fur in King's Landing Flea Bottom.
Well, he could bring some with it. He says he doesn't, but he brought a bag of silver. He could have bought some. I don't think it's crazy.
He doesn't, but...
He doesn't mention it, but...
He doesn't mention it, so I'm assuming he doesn't.
He could have wore leathers under his furs, left his furs outside.
Yeah, black leathers. He's not dying. He's not dying. Well, they don't have a supermarket, Nelson, to go buy some clothes.
John, when he gets here, he says all the wildlings he sees are wearing furs and boiled leathers, which means they know how to kill animals and make leather. You get leathers from animals.
Okay. And he'd look like a wildling, is what I'm saying. He'd look like a wildling.
What I'm saying is, what do peasants in the north wear that the wildlings don't?
He's not with peasants. He's with a...
He shows up as like a singer.
As a sword, as a warrior, as a soldier with a lute that can play the harp.
I didn't take it as a soldier. I just took it as a singer. He was just a singer. Which I guess you're right. Normally, I guess singers as musicians should be dressed fancier than most people. But I didn't think there was anything weird about it. So right when he first starts talking,
sure, coming dressed as Davy Crockett with a beaver on his hat.
Who the fuck knows what he was wearing? That's all I want to say. Let's on to the next.
We jumped ahead a little bit when he first starts talking about how they talk about the song. And John had mentioned earlier, it is a weird song because it's about the Dornishmen, which are literally the south as it gets.
Super south. Well, yeah.
I want to stay on this topic real quick. I don't want to pass on, because if it's that easy to cross the wall and blend in, then it shouldn't be that hard to become a deserter, is all I have to say.
Well, we talked about this in the Chet chapter. Like, no one, there's no photo ID. You've been harboring this the whole time. It shouldn't be that hard to become a deserter.
It shouldn't be that hard. So
it isn't.
So then but people are afraid to desert south.
I would say, though, besides the actual climbing of the wall bit, what makes it easier for Mance is he wasn't in blacks. He was going over in leathers.
We don't know.
Whereas if you desert from the wall, you're in all black.
I'm sure he wasn't wearing all blacks, but...
Yeah, and if you're a deserter from the Night's Watch, the first person you come across, you just better hope he's a shady guy. And he's like, yo, give me some clothes and I'll pay you some money and we're good. You know what I mean? And then you're okay. But Mance didn't have that problem because he wasn't in all blacks. All
right, whatever. So Mance asks if he actually killed the Half-Hand. That's the next big part of this deal. So,
yep.
Did you truly kill my old friend? And should I praise you or curse you? Kind of a cool little conundrum.
I think it kind of shows who Mance is a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't seem like that bad of a dude.
I don't know if he is a bad dude. He just didn't want to be his Val. I wonder what he was on the wall for. Now, do you have any clue of Mance's?
I do. I don't know if we've heard it before, so I'm afraid to say anything. I feel like we might have heard it, but I'm not sure. So I'm not going to say it. There, we do get like a description of like what he looks like here a little bit more. He was middling height, slender, sharp face, shrewd brown eyes, and long brown hair that had gone mostly to gray. There was no crown on his head, no gold rings on his arms, no jewels at his throat, not even a gleam of silver. He wore wool and leather, and his only garment of note was his ragged black wool cloak, its long tears patched with faded red silk. And I wasn't saying that to try and like win that argument, even though I think I do win that argument with that book. I was just like saying that.
And I'm saying he still would look out of place. He would still look out of place.
If he took the cloak off, he looks totally fine. He's in wool and leathers.
Whatever.
I agree.
So yeah, he goes through some more of the introductions. He basically says who everybody is. This is Magnar of Then. That's Steer. So Magnar of Then. Then he says Magnar means Lord. So this is Steer, Lord of Then. So Then's probably just some place north of the wall. And this guy's the Lord of it. Then he goes to introduce Tormund. He's like, this ferocious chicken eater is Tormund. And then he's like, and then Dala. And Tormund's like, yo, hold the fuck off. You gave Steer his
deals. Give me
deals.
My titles.
Yeah, give me mine. So Tormund's titles. Jon Snow, before you stands Tormund Giantsbane, tall talker, horn blower, and breaker of ice. And here also Tormund Thunderfist, husband to bears, the mead king of Ruddy Hall, the speaker to gods, and father of hosts.
Oh, that sounds more like me. Oh. Well, Jon Snow, I'll find the wargs as it happens. No, not a starch.
Yeah, I love me some Tormund. So, next, Mance introduces Dala, and he basically says, treat her as you would a queen. She's carrying my kid. And last two, Val, Dala's sister, and Jarl, Val's pet. And Jarl objects, saying he's no man's pet. Tormund jokes, saying Val's no man. You should have noticed that by now. And Mance, I think this is cool. He says, there you have it, Jon Snow. the king beyond the wall and his court, such as it is. It's just like, imagine like you go to King's Landing, you go to even Joffrey's small council, right? Like, who do we have there? We got Maester Pycelle, we got Littlefinger. Varys, Tywin, right? And then we got these cats. Like, yeah. This is my kind
of court. These dudes just dicking around, having a good time.
Crushing chickens, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we get to that, man starts asking John some questions. So the interrogation begins, and pretty basic stuff. Nothing too intrusive. Yeah.
How did you get here?
Where'd you come from? It's weird that John says Winterfell from Castle Black.
Castle Black.
Why wouldn't he just say Castle? Yeah. Maybe it matters. I don't know.
I mean, but Mance already
threw out Winterfell.
Mance already told him he knew he was from Winterfell, sure. So it doesn't matter. Yeah,
I don't think he's really... It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I agree, it's weird, though.
Maybe he's hiding that he was at the First Men. Like, obviously, that would be more telling.
Well, if I asked you, where'd you come from? I mean, it's a weird thing to say. But, like, you might say...
That day? I'm like, oh, well, this day...
You might say where you were born is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think part of it is they just went through all those other titles and everything, too, right? Like...
Bastard of Winterfell, Lord Snow of Castle Black.
Like, Tormund made a big show of it, so he's making a big show of it too, you know?
Yeah, going through the whole thing.
Next one is, why is he this far away from home? And then, doesn't really let him answer, ask Rattleshare how many of the crews were with him. There was 5 total, and one climbed the mountain and got away.
It's our boy Stone Snake, he might be out there somewhere.
I know, right? I was a little excited to see that.
Me too. So he has Edmund's head, so we knew he was dead, and Corrin's dead, so we knew he was dead. And the last one was Squire Dalbridge went sent up to, like, he went to, like, hold the thing. And then we heard the horn, and they're like, oh, he's fucked. But I was wondering if he was still alive, but he's not. He's dead, so.
He got
Red Squire Dalbridge.
And then asked John to, like, confirm, was there actually 5 of you, or were there more?
And John gets away with a lie.
What does he say?
He says it was just us. It was just the 4 of us, but the half hand was worth 20 common men, which basically saying like it was more than 5, but just because half hand counted as more. But he basically like gets away without telling anything about the whole ranging of like the other 300 men at the Fist.
I mean, I don't know if that's he was telling the truth without telling the whole truth. I don't think he actually told a lie.
Yeah,
there.
He withheld some information.
I get you, but later he lies because he says like the next question, the follow up is why were you with Corrin then? Because I know Corrin's from Shadow Tower and you're from Castle Black, so why are you two together?
Yeah. How did you from Castle Black? Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely building on his questioning, right? And you're like, well, how the fuck did you guys meet up? Or like, why did you meet up?
I guess you're right. Like, this is, even the next answer could be construed as still true. He's like, oh, he sent me to the Half Hand for seasoning. Like, oh, he didn't send me to the Shadow Tower for seasoning. He sent me to the Half Hand, which is still true. It was just like, oh, go 2 steps that way to the half end.
The one weird thing too, like if you're Mance and you're kind of trying to read through bullshit, I don't know if he knows Benjen is missing or not, so maybe that would tell. But if his uncle is first ranger at Castle Black, couldn't he season him? So
that's true.
I don't know. That would be something where like roll shit radar, but
he probably knows
Benjen hasn't been there.
Well, or this was something else I was thinking. So this is, it's coming up right here. So he basically says like, okay, yeah, you were with Corrin. Steer asks why he was like in the Skirling Pass though. And John here, he says he's answering truthfully. It was because all the villages were empty. It was like the free folk had vanished. And Mance here says vanished I and not just the free folk. What the fuck does that mean? Because the only person I can think of who vanished is Benjen. So is he talking about Benjen? That's the only thing I could think of.
Animals, Nelson.
Yeah, I was thinking... More so just life in general.
Just like
life is all gone.
Okay. I guess that makes sense.
But you're bringing up a point that I'm not saying no.
We even talked about that, all the other.
Yeah, the woods are dead.
North of the Wall ones here. Yeah.
It's quiet. Yeah, that makes sense. I just thought it was weird. I didn't know what it meant, but that makes sense.
Yeah. And then he asks, who gave you up? Who told us we were up this far? Or, you know, up this way. And Tormund blathers out, oh, I bet it was Craster.
It were Craster, or I'm a blushing maid. I told you, Mance, that creature needs to be shorter by a head. And Mance is like, you fucking idiot. I knew it was Craster. I wanted to know if John was going to lie. And, I stepped in that. See, lad, that's why he's king and I'm not. I can outdrink, outfight, outsing, and my members thrice the size of his. But Mance is cunning. He was raised a crow, you know, and the crow is a tricksy bird. So that comes up later when they're alone. And I think this is where he's like, okay, get the fuck out, you idiots. Mance is.
And Tormund's like, even me? And Mance's like, you especially. You dumbass.
You're the reason everybody's got to go.
Exactly. Yeah. You lost it for everybody.
Tormund doesn't argue.
He's like, nah, I'll leave nowhere where I'm unwanted. Sticks a chicken in his pocket and he's out.
I'm sure he's not too upset.
Flicks his fingers, laughs. Yeah, he's out.
He says, me and the hens are leaving. That's the best part.
So Mance asks him to sit down, offers him some meat. Dallas stays, cuts up the meat, and gives him each half, and then offers him some meat as well, and he takes them both. We get into the guest rite. Did you know guest rite before this, Kyle?
Maybe not officially, but I mean, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was mentioned before while we were reading.
I feel like somebody might have said that once you dined with somebody.
Yeah. I think maybe Kat might have said it, like...
Maybe. I don't remember, to be honest with you, so...
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but... I think right before that, he calls him... John calls your grace again. He's like, that's not something we hear up here. Most people call me Mance. Some people call me the Mance. And just later, because John goes to call him your grace again, and catches himself and calls him your Mance.
Car. I guess your Mance will work.
He says, why not?
Yeah. But he basically says here, he's like, Tormund was right. It is a tricksy bird, the crow. But I was a crow when you were no bigger than my babe here in Dala's belly. It's not even born yet. So don't fuck with me, Jon Snow.
Yeah.
I've seen your tricks.
Tricksy, is that a Game of Thrones word?
I that's a good word. I feel like it's a little too playful to be used in like a serious conversation.
Gollum
like
says
this,
it a bunch of times. If you watch Lord of the Rings, you'd probably watch that.
That's what it's from. Tricksy.
Tricksy hobbitses.
Yeah. So... Mance wonders if he knew how he knew him yet. Like, all right, did you put it together? And I think John's only real guess was that someone sent word ahead.
Yeah, which is weird here because what Mance says is we have no trained ravens. But when they were on the run, the whole time they had that raven, maybe it wasn't a raven, had some bird,
was
eagle
it
watching them the
eagle?
Whole time.
What do you mean? It was the warg, wasn't it?
Sure, but can't you use that to send a letter? Maybe.
Yeah, I bet you could.
Take a letter to Mance.
Are they rolling around with ink and feather and scroll? Like, this is the wildlings. We're not talking
Mance
about...
Mance knows how to read. Should know, maybe not. Mance might not eat it. Yeah, I don't know.
He's not there to write the letter.
Well, he's there to read it. Okay, we're going on. So
he's like, nope, but I don't know. Mance is like, I've seen your face twice before.
Oh, yeah. He gives him the hint that he's actually I've seen you twice.
Yeah.
And John was confused at first, but then he guesses like, oh, wait, when you were in the Ice Watch. And Mance's like, yep, you're right. One time I came to visit with old Lord Commander Corgiel. Came to visit Ned at Winterfell. He was one of the dozen that was like guarding the Lord Commander.
Mm-hmm. Give the fun story with the snow. Rob and John playing the snow. They dump it on Fat Tom.
Did you guys tear up missing Fat Tom?
No, not at all. My eyes were drier than the desert.
He drowned.
I think Fat Tom died in King's Landing with Ned. Ale belly drown.
Yeah.
Ale belly. Ah, fuck.
Fat Tom's an OG.
But yeah, I remember Fat Tom was there because Fat Tom was there and Arya had to sneak by him or something. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Arya would fuck with Fat Tom. Everybody fuck with Fat Tom. Poor Fat Tom getting snow dumped on here. Fat Tom's been dead for 2 books. He's still getting fucked with.
Then the cool one is that he climbed the wall when word that Robert was coming up. He must have changed his clothes into something that would have blended in.
So one interesting thing here before that is, like, he says there's more commerce between the Wildlings and the Night's Watch than you think.
That is an interesting comment.
Like, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, he does show you another thing. When he was injured and about to die, they took him to a Wildling to save his life, which at that point, you would think the Wildlings were like, fuck this guy. Like, they must have gave him something then. Like, so I think that's kind of what he means. It's like, if we give them something that they really want, they're willing to at least save us. Or
I would say one thing that you might think is a little too extra, but people have talked about in the fandom, is if Night's Watchmen go to Mole's Town,
yeah,
that's not free. Where do Night's Watchmen make money? Nothing they do at the wall pays them. So if they want to make money, they got to be trading with somebody. Do they trade with the Wildlings? It is like where this theory goes. And it all comes from who pays
for the horse?
Money. Exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, black markets spring up when there's a need.
Black
a
markets.
Want, you're
black
talking
brother
about,
market.
Yeah, night markets. they like you're talking about like the swords and stuff. We were talking about that earlier, right? Like, so like there's a need for like weapons and things up north of the wall. These people have it.
Exactly. Like what if you're in the Erie and you had a connection to the Stone Crows? You could definitely make some money there, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'm sure it happens. Why not?
Well, it's curious. Like how, like Mance took a bag of silver, he said, with him.
How does he get money?
Exactly.
Where did that silver come from? Like they didn't just mine that silver and turn it into coins north of the wall.
Yeah. Again, I don't think this is a super spoiler, but I will say that we hear at some point of people trading with wildlings from the sea because they have the whole seaward face. So anybody who can get a boat up in there, like people from Essos and stuff, if you can get a boat up to the coast above the wall. So that's one. That's literally the only entry point I can see.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see like you get some nice furs and shit like that. But like what does a wildling, unless you're paying Night's Watchman for whore money, like if that's the only thing that a silver coin is worth for you, like I'd rather trade for materials if I was a wildling.
Yeah, they could use it amongst themselves. But no, I'm not. I'm saying the thing is, if the Night's Watchman pay for whores, where do they get money? And the answer is they have to get it from wildlings.
Sure, that's what I'm saying. Like, but if you are a wildling and you're bartering with the people at sea, wouldn't you rather ask for like armor or gear, like gear rather than a bag of silver coins? So then you go to the Night's Watchman and you ask for,
well, say I'm a Night's Watchman, right? And I'm like, I'm horny and I want to go to Molestown, but I don't have any money. So I go to the armory and I steal a sword and I go to some wildlings I know and I'm like, hey, like, well, as a wildling, why would you not buy that sword from me? Is my point to you. But yeah, you can get the sword from overseas, maybe, but you can also get it from...
Because then you can just kill that Night's Watchman. If you already have a trade partner, you don't need the Night's Watchman. So keep trading with the people at sea.
Night's Watchman will sell to you for cheaper because he only wants enough to go fuck the whore. Again, I don't think it matters, but...
Yeah, I think you're missing like commerce in general points here, Jeff. Like,
no, I do get it. I just don't understand the point.
I mean, people have stuff, other people don't, and people want stuff, and like, I mean,
I'm saying the value of a sword to your enemy is a lot more than a knight in Molestown.
Would Chet care if he gave a wildling a sword if he got to go fuck somebody? Not at all. And again, I'm not saying that's true because like, we don't know. We were in Chet's head, that didn't happen.
I've met Chet one time, and he
talked about how he killed a girl because she wouldn't fuck him, and he wanted to go take over Craster's.
You were literally in the Chet chapter defending Chet. So
I play both sides. But
Bring back the tape.
All right, let's keep going.
Nothing you say matters to me at all.
Going back to the chapter, I think Mance says it's interesting that the wildlings and the Night's Watch talk to each other. And in his story, like Kyle said, like they do.
I think we knew that a little bit though, like talking, because Rangers obviously asked Craster, like Craster's an example. Like they range and ask people, like they've made some relationships.
That's a great example. Yeah, Craster's a great example. And
so maybe the commerce was just them talking and not, I get it. They got to get some more money. Maybe they fucking throw the Molestown guy a sword and they're like, all right, let me fuck your girl now.
Yeah, without winning too many arguments over you, just with straight textual evidence. Like when they go to Craster's, they give him an axe. So like, yeah, and Mormont did that. Like, yeah, he gave his enemy an axe for some information and a place to stay.
I literally just gave you Craster, so.
Thank you for winning the argument against yourself. But yeah, it's interesting. And
I'm not saying they don't do it. I'm saying it's not that common that they're just giving this whole army every fucking sword that they have. Because obviously they've got spears and arrows and shit.
I know. I'm fucking with you. I was going to say something, but I forget now.
Yeah, fuck off. So let's get into the second time Mance goes down.
Yeah, we're in that.
Is where we were.
So pretty much he just says, like, I heard the king was coming north. I couldn't miss that, right? Like, this is the dude that is supposed to be my adversary or whatever. I had to see with my own eyes. And I also wanted to eye up your Uncle Benjen as well. He was first ranger and the bane of my people. Got on a horse, jumped the wall, wearing his wildling clothes, but still blended in because it makes perfect sense. Because, like, I mean, that's what the northern peasants would wear. So then he just joins up with the Baratheon garrison, essentially, right? Like the whole motorcade.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Like they're just sucking in people as they go along. So why not just pretend to be one of those people?
And he knows every bad song north and south. Doris and his wife, Bear and the Maiden Fair. He knows all of them.
Names more.
I don't know. The thing is, I don't know any wildling songs. I don't know the name of any wildling songs.
You know nothing.
Jenny of Old Stones. That's not bawdy, but
I don't remember. Whatever. So Mance at the main deal was sitting in the back, ends up sitting next near John, just looking at all the kids, seeing Joffrey and whatnot. So
this is where they get into the guest right, because John's like, well, if my dad, like, he's like, basically, like, that's ballsy as fuck. If my dad would have found you, like, in Mance cuts him off, I was like, I'm dead.
Uh-huh. Well, before that, though, John made the connection to Bale the Bard, right?
Oh, yep. That's true.
Yes, from Ygritte's story.
Which, yeah, I mean, it was kind of makes sense why she told that story now, right? Like,
well,
do you think she knew that he climbed the wall for that
probably
time?
That's a good question.
She seems close enough to Rattleshirt.
But I don't know if Rattleshirt knows that. Like, I don't know.
Mance,
like,
was probably gone for months.
But we don't know when they, like, at the timeline, and I'm going to say the timeline probably doesn't matter here. Like, when did he say, like, all right, everybody get together? Like, he could have climbed the wall when he was just a solo in a wildling deal.
I mean, that's still the king, or, you know, like.
But he wasn't the king. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying before he.
Mance is most definitely the king when he goes over the wall, because he literally says, I wanted to see Robert face to face, king to king.
Okay. That's true.
I think she could have known. I think what John thinks here is John. I think John initially thinks that the Bale the Bard story that he heard was an exaggeration of what Mance actually did. I didn't actually think that until you said this, Kyle. But I think that's actually, now thinking back on it, he thinks that the Bale the Bard song is an exaggeration.
Yeah, he's calling him Bale the Bard.
And what Mance clarifies, like, no, Bale did everything he sang about. Like, that's actually a true story. I just use that as inspiration.
Yeah, I think what Ygritte was saying was it's more so like a famous story about his family and wildlings, more so than Mance actually climbing. I think that happened to be a coincidence that Mance.
Yeah.
Well, obviously Mance climbed the wall. I think it's almost pretty common practice.
I just meant more of why that was written out in the book. Kind of what Nelson was talking about with the streams earlier. Like, why was that the story she told? Right.
Agreed. Yeah. I do agree with
and
you.
It's because it fit this situation here.
It also paralleled Bran at the exact same time.
Yeah, hiding out under. Yep.
Yeah. So also, what I was going to say earlier when we were talking about the wildling commerce, at least the second half of John's kind of story in the last half of the book was like him kind of like learning that the wildlings aren't as horrible as he thinks, right? He hears the Bale the Bard story. At one point, Corrin tells him, only fools like Thorin Smallwood despise the wildlings. They're just like us. They're just people. Like, they're some good, some bad. Right. And now he's actually meeting them. And Mance's story is basically like, yeah, I joined them because they were nicer than the people that I was with, basically. So John's kind of learning, like, yeah, they're not like necessarily the bad guys. They're just the guys that we're fighting.
Everything's not so black and white, huh?
Exactly.
It really does make no sense to me why the wildlings are that enemy.
But sometimes they come over the wall and hurt people, right? Sometimes they come down and raid villages.
Well,
or
sometimes people south of the wall hurt people too, sure. And they send them to the wall to defend the wall. So
they didn't bend the knee, Jeff.
They're not paying tax. So then Mance tells a story about how he got cut up. The girl saved his life, stitched up his deal. He wanted to the freedom. We kind of hit on all that. And he's like, all right, so like, why did you leave? Like, why are you here? And John's only reason that he thinks he'll accept is that, you know, and it's pretty fleet of thought here, I think, and pretty quick minded by John. When you saw all my brothers and sisters and they were up on the days, you know, where was I?
I think he needs more. This isn't a good answer for me. I think he needs like another sentence or two. Because to me, when that happens, he joins the Night's Watch, right? What happens when I can't get what I deserve? I join the Night's Watch. Okay, well, why'd you leave the Night's Watch though? That's my question.
Yeah, you're right. I'm surprised Mance kind of hops on like, we need to get you a new cloak. Like,
if he would have said, like, then I joined the Night's Watch, said my vows, and realized I was locked into some shit that I didn't sign up for. You know what I mean? Like, I
think that's a little bit too close to Mance's reasoning, which would be like, I just told you that reason, so fuck
that's
off.
That's how you relate to that person, right? Is you say, like, I realized I had a shit life ahead of me, so I made this bad decision. Right. It was too late by the time I made the decision. And now what am I going to do?
I actually think that way is too close to Mance. I'm like, well, that's unoriginal as fuck, John. Like, he's got an original thought because he's been shit on his whole life. And now he's got the chance to be
like what Chet was thinking. Okay.
High up in this deal. You know, he doesn't have to be the bastard of Winterfell anymore. He can be.
I mean, he did kill Corrin too, right? So, I mean, he's kind of already proved a little bit. I know that was kind of the plot. Or the point of him killing Corrin, but like, I mean, it's kind of definitely carries some weight, right?
Yeah. So for the Mance thing, I don't know if we actually did say it. He like talked about it too much. He was out on a ranging, right? And he got attacked by a bear. A shadow cat.
Oh, shadow cat. My bad.
Yeah, they were skinning an elk, got attacked by a shadow cat. He drove it off, but it shedded his cloak to ribbons.
Messed him up.
It hurt him pretty bad, too. Yeah, so they thought he was going to die, and they wouldn't be able to get him back in time. So they take him to a wildling village where they knew there was this old wise woman, which is weird because we never see this, right? Like, at the beginning of our experience in the Night's Watch, all the wildlings are gone. Like, they know where these villages are. Like,
yeah.
And they were there. It makes me wonder, like, how much of the, how, like, are they actually enemies? Like, I don't think they were enemies to the point where the Night's Watch was going out and just destroying their villages.
No, yeah, I don't think so.
It was like, as long as you keep to yourself, you're good. Just, like, yeah. stay the fuck over there.
Keep the couple hundred yards of, from wall to this tree line and stay behind the tree line. And,
yeah.
Like, where we want.
The wall was very obviously for more than just the wildlings, right? Like, you don't build a 100-foot-tall ice wall just to keep people out.
Sure, but if you ask any single person, even on the Night's Watch, the day before the book started, what the wall for, they're going to say wildlings. Because none of them believe in others.
Because that is so far gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would agree that it doesn't make sense to build a 700-foot wall for the wildlings, especially with the...
It's 700 feet tall?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I said 100, but...
Yeah, it's monstrous.
Yeah, big, big. So yeah, shattered him, he took to the village, cleaned his wounds, sewed him up, fed him porridge and potions so he was good. And she sewed up the ransomite cloak as well with some scarlet silk from a shy that her grandmother had pulled from the wreck of a cog washed up on the frozen shore. It was the greatest treasure she had and her gift to me. But at the Shadow Tower, I was given a new wool cloak from the stores, black and black and trimmed with black, to go with my black breeches and black boots, black doublet and black mail. The new cloak had no frays, nor rips, nor tears, and most of all, no red. The men of the Night's Watch dressed in all black, Sir Dennis Malister reminded me sternly, as if I had forgotten. My old cloak was fit for burning now, he said. I left the next morning for a place where a kiss was not a crime and a man could wear any cloak he chose. And then that's when he makes John give his story. So, again, I think it's kind of just like he's realizing that, like, these people aren't bad. It's kind of the same thing that John's realizing is why he's won over. So, cool.
Yeah.
Anything you got, Colin? That's all I got for this chapter.
I mean, I was going to say that, like, this could be a tricky situation if John is here when Jorah? When they attack, right?
Gior.
I forget all their names. I'm sorry.
Jorah's with Danny.
Okay, yeah.
That's why that one's important, because there are actually two that are very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's remember what happened at the end of the Chet chapter.
Yeah, three horn blasts. We haven't heard that yet.
Yeah, three horn blasts. Chet pissed himself. I'm just saying that might throw a wrench in the Night's Watch plans.
True, but I feel like either way, like, then that's going to happen here as well.
Yeah, right? It makes sense. Yep. I was just reminding you, making sure you were thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But it's like, I mean, I guess we kind of already know what's about to happen, potentially. I just feel like if the other brothers see John, like, it's going to severely hinder his opportunity here.
Oh, he's not going to be able to have the, trust me, I'm an undercover agent in, like, the midst of battle.
I flip back.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation.
Does he wait, like, Stannis' men to see who's actually winning?
Yeah. The phrase. Like, all right,
Renly's winning. Let's go back.
Yeah.
John Frey. Yeah, I mean, beyond that, I don't really have much else prediction-wise.
Huh?
I think he's going to become closer friends with Mance. I guess maybe this is more prediction. Like, I think that'll happen, and I think he'll continue to see that these are just people as well, and kind of gain a little common ground, and maybe that will help against the fight with the others. How's that?
I mean, yeah. He's still pretty dead set on find out what they're doing. I'm a Night's Watch
guy. I know,
guy.
But I think like you said too, there's bigger things here, and I think he's, when he hangs out with Mance a little more, he's going to see more and more that these are just people.
Gotcha.
And they're not the monsters that they were made out to be.
It's going to become a wildling sympathizer.
But it also might give him an opportunity to learn the warging more, right? Like, there's some of those people up here, so maybe he'll learn to harness that.
That's true. They mentioned it two or three times that they basically are just calling him a warg. He doesn't even, like...
He doesn't even know what being a warg means.
We've only seen him have half of a real warg dream.
Yeah.
They were just talking about the wolf, I think, right? When it attacked Khorne.
Yeah, that was one of their pieces of evidence, which is pretty much that they have a really good connection.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Who knows? Interesting to find out. like you guys said earlier, John himself is kind of boring, but he's in interesting places around interesting people.
Yeah, exactly. So,
cool. All right, well, we'll see Kyle in the next one, and we'll see the rest of you guys in the spoiler section for John 1.
Bye,
Kyle. Later, nerds.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
See you later, Kyle. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, Kyle.
Now on a spoiler section for John 1. Jeff, what are your hot takes?
So I don't really have any hot takes. There's one thing that I like took a note of, like, this is interesting, before Mance himself spoiled it, which I was kind of upset about, is when Mance is offering John the guest rights. And it's just like, John's like actively eating the meat. Like, does John know that he gets guest right? Or
yeah, this is where he goes on to like explain the whole, yeah, like it's, I think we have heard it once or twice, like in passing, but this is definitely the first time where like Mance goes on, is like, yeah, it's as sacred as the heart tree and as old as the first men. Like, this is some real shit you don't fuck with. And Bran will hear the story of like the Rat King who. Like, that'll all happen before the Red Wedding. We'll hear a lot about guest right before the Red Wedding.
So here's my one weird thing about guest right, the way like it goes. Mance is like, yeah, I had guest right, so at least I wasn't in danger that night.
Yeah. So I'm guessing he left.
The next day, are you free to actually leave that night? Or like, could you just like lock that person up and be like, all right, we'll kill you in the morning?
Yeah, I don't know. He was kind of vague about it.
Yeah, I need to get some details on the guest right. But that's the one thing that like really kind of struck me, like, oh shit, guest right. Like, I know obviously guest right becomes way bigger here soon.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know how far you want to go into like all these people. Like,
we don't gotta go into the people. The next thing I had was the song, the Dornishman's wife. So
uh-huh.
I don't really have anything specific about the song. I do actually really like the song. I think it's a cool song. I agree with you. I sang it way too high. Could have done better low pitch. but when John, after the song's done, and when John's talking to Mance, he's like, hey, how'd you like the song? And John's like, yeah, it's pretty good. I heard it before. And Mance says, but what does it matter? For all men must die. And I've tasted the Dornishman's wife. Right. And what?
Okay.
So it says, what does it matter? For all men must die. The king bought on the wall said lightly. And I've tasted the Dornishman's wife. So it's like even that split up. And right, that this is a big thing. For all men must die. Valar Morghulis. Right. This is what Arya's been saying without not even knowing saying.
Uh-huh.
I think we learned
and
soon.
I mean, it's kind of part of the Night's Watch creed too, is like,
I don't think those words directly, but yeah, like they're like, yeah, we're serving
we're all here to die.
Yeah. Corn does say something like that, right? Like someone says like it's a suicide mission, and he's like, what else are we here but for to die in service of the watch?
So we do our vow a little bit quicker, basically.
Yeah.
All right. So like, where are you trying to pull in?
I don't know. I don't have anything too much more to say about it. Just interesting. Like, for all men must die is like a Game of Thrones line. Like, if I hear if someone walking down the street or someone says that at work, I would like under my breath, I'm thinking like Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? That's one of those lines. All men must die.
So like,
I just think it's weird that first off, it's in the Dornishman. It's not only it's like. In the song, but Mance, that's like the one line that Mance calls out when he's talking to John about it. So
yeah,
I think George is pointing it out for us. Again, we don't know what that is yet. Like, we don't know Valar Morghulis means all men must die.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's kind of why it's cool. Like, we'll find out. It's one of those things that just like, you'll find out later, and then on a reread, oh shit, Mance is saying Valar Morghulis in his song right here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that. I don't know where we would go with that, but.
The last point I had, the last big, and I think it's kind of a big one, is the whole like Mance cloak thing, right? So Mance cloak slashed, gets red ribbon put in it. Something seems symbolic about this. So there is the whole, and we'll go down this. I don't believe this, but we're gonna play with this for a little bit. Mance's Rhaegar theory, right?
Okay.
And he gets his black cloak sewn with red. The Targaryen sigil is a red dragon on black.
Okay,
right?
So black and red. I gotcha. And Rhaegar was wearing black armor with, I'm sure, probably a black and red cape.
Rhaegar is known for playing the harp. Jon comes in here and he meets a king. playing a harp. Again, like the age kind of works out. I don't buy it. I'm just, this is something people think. So like the whole, like the cloak thing, people think it's just another hint towards him being Rhaegar, because again, he's basically getting like a Rhaegar sigil on his back, like a fucked up version of it. I don't know if I buy that. When I was looking into this earlier, I found this Reddit post.
It's interesting for sure. It is an interesting thought. I don't know. Like I've been on this horse a long time. The glamour thing is one of those that I don't want to be, like, obviously it becomes a big part because Mance glamour's rattle shirt, and it's a little bit, but you know, that's something where like at least he's wearing like a helmet, you know, when he's rattle shirt. It's not like he's purely taking on another person's face.
He wears a raven's helmet.
Who does?
Isn't that in this chapter?
Rattle shirt?
No, Mance.
No.
He wears a raven's... I'm glad I didn't say that then. He wears a raven's helmet.
All right, what does that matter? That makes me sound like he's a worker for Blood Raven.
Who's a Targaryen.
Well, that... I don't... Fuck.
So this isn't what I was just... This isn't about the raven helmet. This is the Reddit post I was talking about. So this one talks about how the cloak... How it has like the symbolism towards Rhaegar. But this post... And I'll share this post in the Discord... is saying, basically, I don't buy that. And it says, if we look through, we can see that it heavily foreshadows Jon's present and future arc. Mance goes on a ranging. During the ranging, he is attacked. A wood witch bends his wounds and gives him a gift. Mance returns to the Night's Watch, a changed man who sees things different from the rest of the Brotherhood. The Watch cannot accept the changed Mance. The changed Mance cannot accept the Watch. Mance deserts and becomes a king who wears black and red cloak.
Well, okay, so what they're going for is that Jon comes back. I mean, I'm sure I didn't read the article yet, but John's going to come back to actually rejoin the Night's Watch. He then wants to like become partners with the Wildlings, and then he gets killed for it.
Yeah.
Which makes his cloak black and red because he spills blood on his cloak.
Oh, sure. Maybe that's where it's going. I actually didn't read this whole thing. I was thinking red and black cloak because John's a Targaryen. John is the one that at the end of the story is the king, right? Mance ends up king wearing a red and black cloak. What if Jon ends up king, knowing his true parentage, with the red and black banner? Right, because everybody says, like, Jon's a Targaryen. I think also, but what if we go with what the show's ending is? Jon goes north at the end of the show.
Yeah, back to north of the wall.
And what if Jon does find out his true parentage in the books, does something with the Long Night, and then says, I don't want it, and goes north of the wall to become king behind the wall? But when you reread this chapter... Then this is a foreshadowing of Jon. Mance is the foreshadowing of Jon.
I gotcha.
That's what this post is about.
Yeah, okay. I could see parts of that for sure. Yeah, I just want to, again, like, it's stupid to me that it's accepted or people think that Rhaegar could go from fighting at the Trident to just escaping north and then living amongst, like, he's a Targaryen. Like, that's the one kind of type of people that gets spotted out of nowhere. That's why Aegon shaved his head. Like, Mance, like, has hair.
Well, he's gray haired, but this is different, and he's only like 36.
Gray, not white with gold streaks or however they.
But he's only 36. How many 36 people are gray or described as gray haired?
It's a different time period.
The theory about like the Jon foreshadowing thing doesn't have anything to do with being Mance being right. Right. Well,
I think it's a good foreshadow. I think it's a solid foreshadow.
Read a little bit further down. It says the Ashai silk beyond the wall is such a contrivance that it stands out and demands attention. The parallel is obvious. Red woman from Ashai is Melisandre. So I think that goes along with what you're saying, the stabbing.
Yeah, and he gets resurrected.
Yeah, from the red woman with Ashai. Mance gets saved by the red string. Jon gets saved by the red woman from Ashai.
Yeah, I think that's... And maybe at some point, Jon is going to go back north. I think that's probably pretty fucking stupid, but... What I would accept if Jon's storyline ends up being like, all right, fuck it, I don't want it, I'm going back north, at least take the wall down. Like, I'm going to go north and, like, I'll be, like, the north, yeah. North. You're like, all right, fine. Like, we're still here, but I'm, like, super far away.
Yeah, or he builds his own fucking castle way out in the north. He starts his own house. They break the wall down and then, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'm in for it.
So I do want to talk quick, because I just remembered it as we were talking. When Mance says he saw his face twice before, and I mentioned in the non-spoiler that I actually thought he meant seeing his face with Ned and Benjen and not physically seeing it.
Yeah.
My mind went to, he can see in his face that he is Stark. So that was just kind of my point of like getting into the R plus L equals J of it.
Well, if anything, you're anti-R plus, like you're at least in Kyle's mind by saying, oh, you're Ned and Benjen's, you know what I mean? You look like them.
Yeah.
That almost throws him off to just like believe that he is just Ned's, you know what I mean?
Correct. But yes, I think it would throw off like, oh, well, you've got to be Ned's son. You look just like him type of thing.
Yeah.
Agreed. But I mean, it at least shows, it would have showed that he has Stark in him where you kind of, but then again, if you said like Ned and Ashara, like he still has Stark in him. So I don't know, but
it shows that it's Benjen and Lyanna, the double Stark, because they always say Ned looks like the most Starky.
Double, he's super Stark. And he's seen his face twice. He's got two Stark exactly, faces in there. Yeah. That's super strange.
Because he's Rhaegar and he's seen both Lyanna and Benjen.
Maybe.
No, now we're just going crazy. Okay. We've been going for a long time. We're calling it there. There's a lot to talk about from Mance and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure we'll get into some more theories. Well, Mance will be around for a while.
There's a lot. There's a lot to come forward. Even with like Val and Dalla and where this baby is going to go. But we've got plenty of chapters of when it actually is coming closer. We'll talk about.
Yeah. Well, this was a long one. We'll save some of those other ones for other shorter chapters. So we'll see you guys in the next one. Thanks for listening. And bye-bye.
Bye.